Welcome to Resiliency Redefined. I'm your host, Robin, and I am thrilled to share with you information about resiliency, well-being, performance, education, business, parenting, and everything in between. I'm committed to joining you each week to talk about these big ideas and bring them into action, habits, tools, strategies, tactics that allow us to finally uncover what it takes to truly be well. And I'm just so excited that you're here. Welcome to episode 2. Okay, so I jumped in here so quickly to record episode 2 after I fumbled my way through episode 1 yesterday, because something that I know is if I overthink this, that I'm not going to keep going, because I'm going to be like, oh, I can redo episode number 1. I'm going to do this and this, but I'm going to create episode 2. We're going to jump in here because, again, this is, I'm giving myself lots of permission to like figure this out on the go. Okay, so first and foremost, I am so glad that you are here. I'm so excited to tell you just a wee bit more about my program on human resiliency and how I know to how what I've come upon, what I've done in the last 2 decades studying this in a more of a formal way, but also informally for pretty much most of my life. So again, I'm so glad you're here. And I thought this would be a beautiful opportunity to tell you about my theory on everyday resiliency, because this is going to really be like this foundation that we'll come back to often in our time together. So I thought, let's set us up for success by like building a solid foundation. So for context, when I first started studying human performance, and just as a wee bit of a background, I look at this from the lens as a behaviorist. When I first started studying this idea about human resiliency, I was just so curious about what it was about people that differentiated them from people who were be able to like get up when life was hard versus those who would give up. Like, I was just really curious about the psychology of the underdog. Now, often, especially when we're kind of pursuing educational different endeavors, we don't always get to like go out and study exactly what we want to study. We actually have to essentially have a day job. So the majority of the onset of my program was done essentially off the side of my desk. And full disclosure, I was doing all of these other projects, a lot of supporting other people in their research. And this was this like through line for me, though, that I was just so curious about. And whenever I had a window of time, this is where I would put my energy. And again, so this was the research question I started with. Why do people give up versus the people who can get up? What is that psychology about? Now, at the time in the research, so this was in the early 2000s, a lot of folks who were studying human resiliency were talking about things like grit, mental toughness, hardiness, like this idea that resilient people were just like somehow like superhuman in some way or another. And when I started to meet people and share stories and hearing it from a, like a qualitative perspective, like when people would tell me about some of like the worst things that they've ever navigated or some of the most darkest, difficult seasons of their lives, one of these like kind of pieces that came to the front very quickly is that they never would describe themselves as people who were resilient or tough or hardy or strong. Often in this like deep vulnerability, they would talk about how vulnerable they felt, how, you know, uneasy they felt, how uncertain. Yet there was this beautiful collective of people who were able to find a way through. So they didn't see themselves as being well-resourced. They didn't see themselves as being these people who can navigate these hard things, but there was something about them that allowed them to do it. So that's what I wanted to find out about, like what it is when we don't feel very well-resourced or we don't see ourselves as strong, or we're literally crying our way through it, yet we are able to persist. What does that take? Now, what we discovered in this work was that there were 5 variables, and I use the word everyday resiliency, because it was what people were doing each and every day that would essentially build these pillars that would be able to hold them up even when everything was going off course, even through the darkest, most difficult days. So I was able to put these together in a theory that we called everyday resiliency. Now, I'm just going to hold for one little correction here. You might hear me interchanging the word we and I. This was my work, and I did learn from so many other people. And I worked with students, I worked with other faculty, I worked with other researchers and scholars. And so often I use the word we because I want to show that this was a collective effort. And at 45, I'm learning that at the end of the day, I did lead this work and it's okay to use I. So this is me learning in motion. So I'll do my best to use I to kind of hold the space of what I was able to do in terms of this work. And I do have this propensity of hiding behind we sometimes because I would never want somebody to feel excluded from how they contributed to this work. Okay. That was like our little public service announcement. Let's get on a task. So when I looked at these variables, when I would go over these case studies and just reflect on these interviews and just these shares that people were so generous to share with me, again, even in the most like unearthly places you could possibly imagine. Like I remember talking to one gentleman on the side of the road in Israel. I remember with a mom sitting on this rock on the side of the road in Honduras. Like I was in all of these different places, just hearing just the beauty of the human condition. And when I looked at it and I took like that, like zoom out and being, okay, so what is it that all these people have in common? These were the five things that came forward. The first one was a sense of belonging. They had a home team. They had at least one person in their life. Now, it didn't have to be the same person throughout their entire life, but they had one person in their life that they were fighting for or that would protect them. Like they had somebody who depended on them. And it was so beautiful to see because, again, it evolved and it shifted and changed through the course of their life. But at every moment, they at least had one person that was in their corner. Now, they might be in a position where they were the one person protecting that other person. Maybe it was a child. Maybe it was a sibling. Maybe it was an elderly person. Like they had this like calling to protect. And then there'd be other times when they would like, you know, have to show up because that person held them accountable, right? So maybe it was a parent who said to their child, like in my case, I'm not going to let you go. I'm not going to let you fall through the cracks. And we'll talk way more about that in future episodes. But again, just this idea that they had somebody who was with them in it, or even this was so powerful, even the memory of someone. Right? Even the memory of someone, it could have been like a colleague, a fallen colleague or a comrade where they're like, you know what? I got to keep pushing because I'm the only one who remembers this fellow soldier and I will not let myself go down because I have a duty to him or to them. And so again, it was just this beautiful sense of connection that we would call belonging. Okay. So number one is belonging. It's just this idea that we're part of this bigger interconnectedness. Now, the second variable we learned about was perspective. And what's so interesting, the way that I can share this with you is each and every one of us, we carry our perceptions. It's our lenses in which we see the world. Our lived experience form our perceptions. So like, for example, you meet someone and you have a perception of them very, very quickly. We have these kind of like scripts that we lean into. Even for example, like asking somebody a question, like, what do you do for a living? We actually do that because it actually is like this form of like discovering how much respect that we should show them in this really kind of interesting hierarchical society. It's like, oh, so again, and when we know what they do, it gives us so much information about them very, very quickly. And so we have these perceptions. But the difference here is what I call perspective, which means, yes, I'm the thinker, I'm the seer, I'm the person who's holding this knowledge, but I'm also able to see it in context. I'm able to like step out of myself and see the big picture. And to be able to do that, we have to for sure understand our perception, but also we tie into what we know to be true. And our perception, our perspective grows in relation to the lived experience. So the more information that we have, the more opportunities, the more people we meet, it's going to broaden our understanding. And the other beautiful thread through that is this idea about our head and our heart in alignment. So perspective is being able to operate with that intuition, that heart-centeredness, that gut instinct, while also seeing it in context. That's what resilient people were able to do. Essentially, they can make what matters most matter most in the moment. They can read the room, they can feel the room, and they know what their next right choice is. And then they have this courage to be able to walk into that right choice. Even if it ends up not being right choice, they're able to show up. Now, the third variable I learned about folks was the power of acceptance. And my friends, acceptance is tricky. We don't like what we don't like. And so often many of us think of acceptance as approval, that if I'm going to accept it, it means that I approve of it. That is not what we found. It's not what I found. Acceptance is working within your controllables. It's recognizing what is within my control and what is outside of my control. And these people were able to put their energy, influence, and agency into where they actually could make a difference. They focused more on what they had versus what they didn't have, what they could do versus what they could not do. So they worked with what they were given. Now, in episode one, I gave you this example about how I feel like everybody kind of thinks of life as chess and there's this like perfect knowledge and everything kind of has a place and it works the way it does. But I prefer to think of life as poker, where it's like there's like a general consensus, but you never know what you're going to get. You don't know what hand you're going to be dealt, who you're going to be playing against, but you keep showing up. You keep holding that seat at the table. So when it comes to acceptance, it's this idea that we play the hand that we are dealt to the best of our ability in that moment. And what we see and what I have seen is that when people put their energy there, they're going to get the best return on their investment. Now, the fourth variable we learned about, and this is what I feel like the world needs such a big dose of right now, which is why my super secure project that I'm working on is actually book number three, all about this variable, the power of hope, choosing to live hope-filled. Being able to live with the thread of hope in everything that we do radically transforms a person's ability to be able to show up and do hard things. We have to trust that better days are ahead. We have to trust that all this is working for some greater purpose. Now, bear with me on this. This, one of my biggest like issues, I have a lot of issues, but like, this is one of my big issues. One of my issues is when like people like on recipes would be like, oh, this is a great recipe, but just change these 14 things and it's going to be perfect. I like to call that like an irritant issue. I have a lot of those little irritant issues in the world. I'm sure you could perhaps relate. But this big issue, this is like a big, solid, like Super Bowl size issue that I have, is when people say everything happens for a reason, because that is absolutely what I have seen in my lived experience is not the case, because some things just suck. Some things are awful and horrible, and there is really bad forces in the world. And telling a mother who lost a child that everything happens for a reason, I think is cruel. Trying to get people to look for the silver lining in everything, I think is actually mean. Okay, bear with me, because you might already have that on your in a kitchen wall somewhere. So I don't want to offend you, but I want to hear, please hear me out. Not everything happens for a reason, but what we do with the parts and the pieces that are left behind in this blast radius of our hopes and our dreams and just our way of seeing the world, what we do with those pieces matter. Okay, so not everything happens for a reason. I don't believe you had to go through that to be able to do what you're going to do. I don't think that's the case, because if it's meant for you, it'd find you. You would have found a way to your vocation, to your calling, to your purpose. We don't have to go through horrible things for that to happen. And it's what we do with those horrible things that count. Okay, so that's my soapbox. I'll get off of it. Okay, so back on task. This idea of living hope-filled, it radically transforms people's lives. Being able to hold hope, it's so powerful. And we'll talk so much about this on our time together, but that's just the fourth variable to hold space for. And the fifth and the final variable, and again, this was a wee bit of a wild card. We never even actually knew where to fit this into the conversation. I did not know where to fit this into the conversation, was what I was seeing about the power of humor. Now, I'm using humor in like the broadest sense. Resilient people are funny. Resilient people also have a very dark humor. This is like HR violation type humor. Like, this is that humor that it's like most people don't understand, but it's this like ability to like somehow in like when everything's going to hell in a handbasket, that you are still able to like crack an off-color joke, or you're still able to just like, well, could be worse, right? Like, it's just this ability to like not like be crushed by the situation, that you have this like ability to just like hold it just a little bit to catch your breath. Now, the psychology behind that, the physiology behind that, is we see that when you, for example, laugh, your body releases a natural tranquilizer. So for that moment in time, your pain receptors are blocked and you cannot feel pain. So it doesn't solve your problems, but it does give you a moment of reprieve, a moment, again, just to be in that precious place where you're able to respond versus react. So the power of humor is so integral to the process of human resiliency. Now, a wee little digression. I love this one. So one of the interesting research findings that we did find that we put into this area of humor, and like people love this, and I totally get why. And I understand why this one finding that we talk about in my work actually has its own t-shirt because it's such a goodie. And even, for example, when we shared it on social media, this amazing dude, Eric from San Diego, he's part of Phil Jones's marketing, exactly what to say, marketing team. Well, I'll put that in the show notes if you're looking for an amazing person who can help you create reels. Eric created this one little reel. We shared it, and I kid you not, 7 million views in like less than a week was this finding, okay? We learned this. People who swear live longer. I know. There is hope for so many of us. I love this discovery because it speaks to this temperament variable. Now, people talk about like the big five temperaments, but this is what we saw when we like took a deeper dive into it, was this idea that on one end, we have what we call the free flowers. They're the folks who just like roll with things. They don't take everything too personal. They don't like hold too tightly to anything. They definitely don't carry what's not theirs to carry. And they're just able to like process emotion in real time. So those are my flowers. Those are the ones who know to swear very effectively without being sent to the HR/principal's office. Now, on the other side, we have the bottler or the brewer. Now, these are the people that like to hold on to every single offense. They like to hold on to every little irritant that you possibly could imagine. And then I believe they love to revisit them between like 1:30 a.m. and like 3 a.m. It seems like the sweet spot where we wake up in a panic. We have this cortisol spike, which is why we wake up anxious in the middle of the night. That's because we're like not processing things in real time. We're bottling things up. And then obviously our brain has to process that. And then we do it in often inopportune times, which is the middle of the night. So what we were able to see is that it actually impacted things like sleep, which impacts our nervous system, which impacts our immune system. And it has this like cascading effect that ultimately it hit us hard in terms of our overall like health and vitality. So people who swear live longer. That is just useful information. Okay. So what I can share with you is in 20 years of looking at this formally, we were able to, and I was able to see that those five variables work together to create this like constellation of where people lean into to be able to show up, to be able to like just walk in the front door, to just be able to get a seat again at that table. Whatever that looks like, people were able to use those underpinnings to be able to help them show up. Now, what's so beautiful, and I love this idea that why this I think is so important right now to talk about is it creates this accessible way into resiliency. Now, I actually recall when I was working in the academy, I left the academy a wee while ago, and that's again, another episode. But when I left the academy, before I did, I recall somebody saying to me that they thought my theory was very sound. They said, wow, there's a lot that we can work with here. We see it's really deeply thought through and there's lots of evidence. This is great. But there's one problem. You're making resiliency available to like everyone. This like resiliency should be, this was their words, should be something that's like earned. This should be something that it's like aspirational. We can't make it available to everybody because then resiliency would just be like common fare. And I remember in that moment thinking like, okay, you and I are never going to be on the same page because we have such this like philosophical difference on the nature of doing work in this field. To me, I want emboldened every single human, any sentinel being to be resilient because I feel like we're called to. Like, we need people to be able to know that things are going to be okay, that they're going to be able to get through the hardest seasons of their lives. And the notion, even that somebody was out there thinking, oh, we should reserve this for the select few. Like, that was another big irritant, like Super Bowl style irritant, where I was just like, heck to the no, like, we are not going to be friends. And why I feel like, again, it is so important is that human resiliency, it is universal. It is meant for everybody. Now, there is enormous amounts of privilege embedded in resiliency, especially when we look at our cultures, where people are definitely given an advantage to be able to use the strategies and the tools in a way that other people might not have an opportunity to. And part of why I want to create open educational material, such as this podcast and the white papers that I've been doing for over a decade, is because I want to bring this forward. I think everyone should be able to build big, bright futures. I feel like everyone should be able to pick up the pieces from that blast radius and like co-create something that's purpose-filled and something that's meaningful. And again, we're natural born problem solvers. So we're innately set up to be able to be resilient. We're also meaning makers, which means that we can learn, we can reflect, we can advance our understanding, we can level up, we can evolve, we can skill up if we need to. That's part of the beauty of the human condition. Okay, so that is my theory of everyday resiliency. The five pillars, again, belonging, perspective, which we talked about from perception, which is ours, but perspective is the bigger picture, acceptance, hope, and a wee bit of humor. Those are what I have seen in my work that help people get through the deepest, darkest, scariest, biggest situations, seasons of their life. Now, I am so appreciative that you are here, that you are listening, because what I want to do in the next episode is we're going to break those down and take a deeper dive into how do we foster, cultivate, and ultimately forge behaviors, rituals, rhythms, routines, so that way we can be well equipped in each of those areas, so we can be our most well-resourced self to show up in every season of our life. Now, I'll share it for in ways for you yourself, how we can ensure that your threshold for resiliency is solid. And I'll make sure to include lots of examples on how we can do this for our teams, for our loved ones, our children, the people who matter most to us. So that way, when we send them out into that big world of unknown, we're like sending out poker players, not chess players. Now, again, I have no issue with chess. I celebrate those who play chess. Gosh, I love even in all the X-Men when like when Magneto and Professor X like had all these like moments of chess, these thought leaders together. It's beautiful. My friends, I'll never be that person. And I'm okay with that. I like to be that little rough around the edges poker. We're going to play it by ear. We're going to do our best to figure it out, because learning is meant to be messy. Learning is meant to be disruptive. It's meant to push us into a place where there's uncertainty, uncomfortableness, unknown. And when we're able to like consolidate and integrate new knowledge, and we're able to see better versions of ourselves emerge, to me, that's the magic. So thank you to each and every one of you for listening. I am so, so excited to be on this journey with you. This episode is like still cringy. I'm sure, again, next week, I'm going to look back at this and be like, seriously, Robin, that's what you did. But I did do it. So again, in that spirit of do your thing, this is a second example of just show up, put it out there. Please quiet that inner critic that probably sounds like an older sibling or a bad ex-boyfriend. Quiet that inner critic. Lean into this like collective of us who are cheering you on. So, okay, episode number two, hopefully is now in the books. Please, please, please do your thing. Oh my gosh, that's like my second please, please, please. I did that in the last episode. Okay, I need to dial back the pleases. I hope you take that first bold, brave, super wobbly step towards something that you want to do. Because what I think would be so cool as we build this arc of this show is like you are doing that work for you. And you're like, hey, you know what? How hard could this be? My friends, part of it's super hard. The other part, when you have the right people around you, it's pretty fun. So lean into that. I can't wait to hear from you. Thank you for spending some time with me. 23 minutes in the books. Hope you got some steady state cardio, or you're doing something, driving, making wonderful choices. I can't wait to have you here next time. And in the meantime, take good care, and I'll see you in our next episode. Bye for now. Thank you for spending time with this podcast episode today. I hope you found something helpful in Resiliency Redefined. Please feel free to share it with somebody who you might think could benefit. Maybe there was something useful, something in particular that you think you could pay forward. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen to your podcast. It means the world to me. And again, thanks for your time. Thank you for your interest. Take good care, and I'll see you next time.